Okay, best thing. I'll go first. I think we've talked about this before on the show, but I have kind of a vintage clothing addiction. Mm-hmm. And anytime I get just like a little bit of extra spending money, I can't help but go straight to the vintage store. And I did that. What day is it? Tuesday. I did it on Sunday. And I bought like this beautiful, beautiful black vintage dress, and it's all lacy and it's beautiful. And now it's hanging up in my closet, and I'm so happy. So.
What's the first occasion going to be?
I have no idea where I'm going to wear it. And I kind of, I like buying things where you can't really place it, you know? It
sure.
It's like has a surprise for
you
me.
You don't know yet.
Yeah, I don't know yet, but.
There's going to be something and you're going to just know.
Yeah, it's like, this is it. This is, yeah. So I'm excited.
That's about wonderful.
That. Thank you.
I'm happy for you.
Thanks.
mine is also kind of fashion related. Ooh. My best thing on Saturday. And this is like hard to show because it didn't actually happen, but I decided this is weird for a 25-year-old man to like finally convince himself of, but I decided I'm going to get my ears pierced.
Whoa.
Just like freak
cool.
it.
Wait, both of them?
Yeah.
Cool.
You know.
Are you going to get little like diamond studs?
No, like little gold hoops, you know, like not like
hoops.
Huge hoops, but like little hoops.
Just like little hooks.
And yeah.
Yeah.
And for the casual listener, I have tattoos, you know, I'm not like against body modification. I'm not afraid of the pain.
You have a tattoo.
I have three.
Oh, really? Yeah. I thought you just had the one on your leg, the Dorito.
No, I'm looking at one right now.
Yeah, right now.
I've never noticed that tattoo before.
Well, it's there. I was just at the mall and I was like, why not? But then I didn't actually do it.
Yeah.
So,
are you going to do it at the mall?
Yeah.
At Claire's?
At Claire's, yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
They have a good deal on piercing and jewelry, so...
When? So when's the day?
I don't know. Like maybe this weekend. Who knows?
I'm going to check in with you at the next podcast and see if you did it.
Well, if I get my ears pierced, I can't not be wearing the earrings for like 6 weeks or whatever. So.
And you can't not be wearing that dress. I think you have to come in with the dress. You have to come in with the earrings.
Okay.
We have to prove this to each other.
I'm jealous of that guest host.
Whoever it is. Speaking
whoever
of guest hosts.
Yeah. Who are you?
My name is Charlie.
What's your last name?
Rudoy.
Cool. And what do you do, Charlie?
I play drums in a band called Carol. I also work in the office of the Cedar Cultural Center, which is my day job. Mm-hmm. But I'm not here to talk about office management.
Trading inside office gossip.
Ooh, when you're ordering new paperweights.
Yeah, all the essentials of running an office. What's your best thing?
My best thing, I think I made spinach and artichoke dip for the first time.
Mm. How'd it go?
Well, it went really well, but it's traumatizing to make and important not to disclose how you did it when you show up to the party because there is so much cream cheese involved.
Oh, sure.
And I guess I'm going to say it on the radio. I didn't tell the people I was with, but none of you are eating it. I mean, I think it was 10 ounces of cream cheese. Which
is that like two packages?
That's actually the standard package. Or
okay.
Well, it depends. If you get a tub, it's different, but I made sure to get the...
Sure.
But looking at that much cream cheese... Yeah, it's kind of gross, but it was delicious and slow cooked it.
I had kind of a traumatizing cooking moment last night. I'm roasting a chicken tonight. So yesterday I had to like, you know, take it out of the bag, wash it, clean it a little bit. And I was very aware that the poor thing used to be alive as I was like handling it. You know, I was like, you used to be a living creature and now you're in my sink.
I got a rotisserie chicken last night and I was like taking
sometimes
off all
the
of the meat of the chicken and I could like see its little ribs when I got to the bottom of it and it made me so sad.
Yeah.
And I'm totally not a vegetarian. Like I don't think of animals often when I'm eating, but that was really, really vivid.
I had the complete opposite experience where I just feel like I ate a lot of meat this weekend. Mm-hmm. So last night I made a very veggie heavy dish. Mm-hmm. And I spent all night just thinking I wish I was eating an animal. Like I think I felt
you craved it.
Yeah. I wished that I could see the ribs of something I was
of
eating.
Of some poor little chicken.
I'll report back. I'm not going to not roast the chicken. It's
no,
like,
you have to now.
Well, sorry, in honor of its life that you value, just roast it well.
Exactly. Thank you.
Yeah.
God. I'm glad you're here, Charlie. Good Lord. Well, this is Pop Till We Drop, and we're going to talk to Charlie a little bit about what he does, his music and his artistry. And you two do a lot of stuff. You guys are like bouncing all over the place. And I want to talk about, like, you know, hustling.
The hustle.
Everybody hustles. So I want to talk about that. So I'm Alex Goderud.
I'm Tess Weinberg.
We're joined by Charlie Rudoy. And support for Pop Till We Drop is brought to you by the roasted chicken industry, bringing you delicious chickens for a long time. Wake up in the morning with a feeling in my head. Just another casual swirl made of lies and lead. Always heavier when it's in a balloon.
Is Carol spelled like the lady's name?
No, two R's, two L's.
Do you think that's hard for people to find you on the internet?
I don't know if it's hard for them to find us on the internet. It's hard for people to remember that. So we were just on this big tour and we were in San Francisco. We played this venue, and one of the things we were really excited about this venue is we knew they had a big marquee. So all over Mission Street in San Francisco, our name would be there. And I was looking forward to that all day. And we pull up. And it's 1R, 1L.
No.
And so, I mean,
Carol.
You know, yeah. So everyone walking by is just like, oh, my grandma's going to be there tonight. I'm sure. Definitely not going. And I actually have a grandmother named Carol with 1R, 1L, who grew up on Carol Street, 2Rs, 2Ls in Brooklyn.
It was meant to be.
It was kind of meant to be, but the only Carols spelled like us, spelled like our Carol, that are first names, I think are actually men. Male Carols.
Oh, cool.
Like Matt Damon in 30 Rock was named Carol with two R's.
Oh, that's such a good character. True.
So in reality, people always say Carol like the woman's name, but if it's spelled like ours, it's actually like the man's
name.
No,
like the man.
Yeah.
Mm. First of all, two questions. Was your grandma honored? And secondly, so then why did you guys do it with two R's and two L's?
I don't think my grandma just thinks whenever I see her, I try to tell her about the band. She can't see past my beard. And she says, she always says to me, she uses really outdated New York references. So she'll always be like, you look like someone who would ride the subway. And I was like, well, I think everyone, stockbrokers ride the subway. Yeah. Yeah. We chose that name because we lived on Carroll Avenue in St. Paul, actually, when we were all going to school together. But the house was called Carol, because we were the only people who went to our school who lived that far away. And so when you were going to Carol, it meant you were going to our house, not really this avenue. And we kind of had, I hope our landlord isn't listening, but we had a lot more people than should have been living there. And at various times, people were working on, you know, film projects, experimental art projects, and we were the band practicing in the basement. So when it came time to name it, you know, we didn't really name it. Everyone around us was like, well, you guys are Carol. You're the Carol band.
Sure.
So it was kind of this house that was a moment for us.
Did the film and visual element influence the music you were making?
Well, I think like some of our first shows were like, we need someone to play while someone showcases art or something.
Interesting.
Yeah. And like very, very early on, we would make weird trailers for our shows. Before anyone knew who we were, we would just, because there were creative people around, make like stop motion movies. And it didn't feel, the band never felt like it was a singular thing. It felt like it was part of
You weren't four dudes doing separate things from what was going on elsewhere in the house.
Right. Yeah. It just was like, oh, well, we're the music guys.
Cool.
Was it a conscious decision? Like the way you're talking about it, it kind of sounds like it all stumbled together, but it was like, there's four of us musicians, we're going to be in a band now.
Well, it was kind of that we were all, like me and Max were playing in a bar band, like literally doing, you know, Zeppelin covers.
Cool.
That's a thing that still happens?
If I didn't live it, I would think it wasn't, but it is. And it's a wonderful way to spend your weekends.
Sure.
But it didn't feel creatively fulfilling, and Brian, who I wasn't living with at the time, but he was hanging out with all of us. He was making actually like two or three of the songs that ended up on the EP. He had written when he was like 19, and he was just playing them with a laptop and a guitar. He's kind of like a computer programmer guy, and he had rigged it so that his computer laptop, he took off all the keys except for the space bar, and the space bar kind of worked as an activator pedal connected to his laptop, and he would perform like that.
He
was really good at it, but I saw him do that once, and I was like, if you want to stop stomping on that space bar, I could just play drums for you.
Yeah.
So yeah, it wasn't, I mean, it wasn't accidental.
Yeah.
And all of us have been, you know, musicians for a really long time, but I think the way it became Carol was because of that energy.
Yeah.
Sure. On a personal level, when did you start playing the drums and when did you start being a musician?
I think when I was 6 or 7, okay. I started playing drums.
So you're like you're a lifer.
I'm a lifer, but I don't think I'm virtuosic. I've liked being a drummer because I'm not a songwriter, but I'm first and foremost just like an avid listener of music. Mm-hmm. And I think drummer actually allows you to be listener in chief because mm-hmm. being a good drummer is obviously about being able to play the instrument, but I've always found that the joy of my life has been finding people who I think are really great songwriters and wanting to support them. Mm-hmm. And that's why I think being a drummer is such an interesting, not egoless, but you have to reorient your ego a little bit. So like meeting Brian for me, that was a joy of my drumming career, not because I got to do, you know, sicker fills with him, but more because it was like, okay, this is a challenge for me. This is someone sure. songwriting that I want to bring to another level. So yeah, I've been playing since I was 6 or 7. And then since I was 10 or 11, since then, I've never not been in a band.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yeah.
And you grew up in New York, right?
I was born there, grew up in New Jersey, and okay. then moved back there before I went to college.
Okay.
But this was all in New Jersey.
Okay.
Yeah. Harder to do in New York.
Be a drummer.
Yeah, I was wondering, like, in what space in the apartments in New York do you have?
No, yeah, we had a basement in a house in New Jersey.
Mm.
Yeah. That's so mm-hmm. fun.
And I imagine it forces you to listen to someone else's song differently and figure out where you can find your way of supporting them. As opposed to, you know, writing out a chord progression or writing out a melody.
Right.
So I went and saw Carol, it was a week ago today, now, last
yeah,
Tuesday?
Yeah, it was.
At Ice House, and it was mm-hmm. awesome. I was so, it had been a while since I'd seen you guys, maybe like a year and a half. And it was so good and so tight sounding. Like, you guys just sound like you practice all the time. I don't know if that's true or not.
Not recently.
Okay. Well, it sounds like you do, which is really cool.
That's good to hear.
I was there with my friend, and he commented, he's like, wow, that drummer is really versatile. Like, you play, it seems like you're playing a lot of different like styles of drumming, and you can kind of bring it into the forefront and then go back and, like you said, support your bandmates, which is really cool to see from an audience perspective. What is your favorite part about, you know, being in the band? Like, what's your favorite part about the song?
I think what makes our band really interesting is that Brian is an exceptional pop songwriter. I mean, this guy should work in advertising.
And he's the lead singer.
He's the lead singer. He's the blonde. And he, I really think he could write, he does. I mean, you'll like drive by a, you know, Lenny's Car Wash, and he'll just be like, Lenny's Car Wash, gonna get the car so clean. And you're like, that's wonderful. You know? And I just think he can do that in his sleep, but what makes it Carol, I think, is that we have a lead guitarist who hates being a lead guitarist. And so instead, he just creates atmosphere, kind of. You know, he really knows how to build really mm-hmm. lush walls of sound. And then when Brian plays guitar, he's exactly the opposite. He really goes towards clean melodies. And so I think when we really hit is when Max is creating something really big and expansive and Brian is coming through with the most crystalline line. And I think Charles, our bass player, is an incredible bass player and has really good instincts, but is also, he's a really good backup singer. And I've had people see us before when the vocal mix wasn't so good. And they're like, yeah, that was cool. And then they see it where someone mixes Charles up and and you can hear the harmonies and they get it.
Yeah. So on, like, and those harmonies are tough. Like, they're close together and he's like so spot on.
So his mother is a choir, as a choral leader
cool.
in Nebraska. So he'll like beat himself up.
Yeah.
If he doesn't
know. He has an amazing ear though. Like it's really hard to back up saying super close harmonies when you're hearing all the other stuff. And yeah, super good.
The downside is that sometimes he has to, you know, cover one of his ears when he sings. Like when you see like R&B singers in the studio. Yeah. And I don't think that's a great look for our super cool indie band.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's all right.
Well,
worth it.
Whatever works.
Trade-off.
Yeah.
Is being in kind of a non-traditionally structured band more satisfying for you than in being, say, like, bass player just plays bass, rhythm just plays rhythm, lead just only does solos? Does that not interest you?
Sometimes it's maddening because I think we're overly democratic. To make any decision takes so long, and we're all like liberal artsy guys, so it's like, well, okay, I see what you mean there,
sure,
but couldn't one also, you know, but
I feel like
but I think that's what I think a lot of people have said about our music. It feels, and if you, I think criticism of our music too is that it feels a little too well put together, and people, you know, people who like it have said, you know, it feels like nothing's out of place. It feels like it's really truly the sum of four people playing, and if someone plays a solo or someone does something flashy, it's only because that's what the song needed at that point. I think we strive towards that, but at the end of the day, I mean, it's this guy Brian writes these pop songs that
so there's one songwriter in the group,
pretty much. I mean, in the sense that he writes a sketch of something and then he brings it
all build around it.
But the sketches are pretty raw. I mean, it'd be funny if you heard some of them, especially because he's really got a good stream of consciousness in terms of like placeholder lyrics.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it'll just be like, bunny rabbit with the tissue paper on, you know? Like, and you kind of have to, I mean, we're trained enough that we don't even think about those lyrics anymore when he sends you a sketch. Otherwise, you'd be like, what did you mean by like, you know, rhino helicopter go-gurt tube?
Yeah.
And he's just like, oh, I don't even remember saying that. You know?
So do you have a favorite song?
I think my favorite song is Bad Water, which is the one of the two songs. So we did a record in Philadelphia with this guy John Lowe, and that's what we're currently waiting on being released, and we've kind of toured on it, but Bad Water is the first song from that we put out, and I really like it because it's one of the simplest songs we've ever written, and it was the only song we came into the studio to do that record with 12 or so songs, and it was the only one that we hadn't really written before we got there.
Cool.
And it ended up being, you know, the first single we put out.
Sure.
And yeah, I don't know. I just like, I listen to it a lot, and I don't really like to listen to our music very much.
Yeah.
But I come back to that one.
If you had to describe it in three words, what would those three words be?
Three words?
Three words. If you want to do like two or four, that's okay too. But...
No, let's stick to three.
Okay.
I'm going to operate within the limits.
Yeah.
Three words. Can I do a phrase? Can I do nothing?
Yeah.
I would call it, it's a beach vacation from the perspective of the underwater element. So in other words, like it's like a fish or like a amoeba's perspective of your family on your beach vacation.
Oh, that's way more than three words, but that sounds
nice.
Cool.
Nice. Yeah.
That's true.
Sweet.
Very nice.
That sounds fun.
Whoa. I mean, I've heard the song, and that's pretty apt, I think.
I hope the person who wrote that has nothing to do with the lyrical content. I don't want to like undermine the value of his lyrics, but that's what it feels like to me.
Cool.
Thinking back a year or so, year and a half, what was it like being a new up-and-coming band inside like the local hype cycle? Because you guys were the subject of, you know, Pick to Click, Vitamin, so many blog posts and reviews and lists and all sorts of attention, well-deserved and beneficial in the long run, but I imagine it would be pretty disorienting when you're in the middle of it.
Yeah, it was really disorienting, and it also, here we are like in the current studios, right? And that, you know, It's a total blessing to have been able to come into a place like this and to record. And but you know, there are little things about it. Like, for example, when we won the Best New Bands thing at Vitamin, mm-hmm. the big thing is that you win a trip down to South by Southwest. Mm-hmm. That's amazing, right? But no band who goes to South by Southwest is just going to play one show. And when you get down there, you're like, oh, it's just one show at like a really weird showcase. And that's about it. Mm-hmm. And I only say that because I think it's a little allegorical to the false expectations you can get being, you know, getting a lot of Minneapolis buzz. And that's what's good for us is that our eyes are really set on, I mean, we for some reason, we like sitting in vans for 8 hours a day. Mm-hmm. So we're like, we're good at touring. And, you know, I remember during that whole buzz cycle, we played Ardworld, and it was like one of the bigger shows we'd ever had. And the next day we played in Milwaukee to literally zero people.
Wow.
And it, you know, we thought Milwaukee, I mean, that's got to still be in the Twin Cities. And so I think we sought that out. I think we sought out quickly to make sure that we never got a big head about that. Mm. And we saw that for what it was, which is the community that we have come from supports us. And that's unbelievable. And the fact that it's Minneapolis means that you not only get accolades, but you get to be on the radio and you get to be in the newspaper, you know, get to be on the Daily Circuit, you know, that's awesome. But I think right away we were like, let's get out there and fight again, because it's, you know, everywhere you go, it's no one's heard of you. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, we've put out, we're going through this process right now of the records being shopped. And when we talk to people, you know, who are interested in us, you know, we'll say, well, just so you know, we did put out a single or two. And in their minds, it's like, well, no, you didn't. Mm-hmm. You put out a single or two in Minnesota where a lot of people heard it. But as far as the world is concerned, as far as the music industry is concerned, you didn't put it out. Mm-hmm. So it's okay, you know. Yeah, I don't know if that really answered your question.
It does. So you have the record finished and recorded now, and you're looking for a national release what's your target?
Well, I kind of have to be cryptic.
Without like betraying any negotiations.
Yeah, so there's there's not a lot I can say except that it's been frustrating and I think as of yesterday or so, it will be a year since we finished the record.
Wow.
And for a while, we were kind of just, I mean, because the story of this band up until October was that me and Max, the guitarist, were doing absolutely everything. And, you know, we booked this month-long tour, probably sent like 5,000 emails, you know, just doing it all. And so when we've had the finished record, we did it with this guy, John Lowe, who had this big name because he did The National, he did Sharon Vinette and people like that. And he was really psyched on it. And we were like, cool, that's it. That's how you get a record deal. And it's not. And so we went right back at all the only thing we know how to do and just emailed all these people.
Sure.
And it nothing really came of it until we went on tour in October. And in LA, we kind of got scouted by a manager who is now our manager, scouted by a label rep who flew out to Texas to see us. Mm. That didn't end up panning out. I won't say the name of the label.
Sure.
But because of that, a new stuff, you know, there's new energy behind it.
Yeah.
The problem is, though, that happened in October, and we'd been trying to get it to labels since February by ourselves. So from our manager's perspective, it's like, great, I got this fresh new album. Like, I'm going to work on it. We'll see what happens. And for us, it's like, oh, that means it's been a year.
Yeah.
So I don't know, you know, so we're just going to keep, you know, I mean, we're going out to like San Francisco in 2 weeks and we're going to play Noise Pop and we're going to go back to South By and we're going to try a tour again, but it does stifle you a little bit.
Yeah. What's the creative process like now? Are you guys still writing songs now that you have this album in the bank or what's going on?
Well, that's the thing is that we're working on them, but it is like a psychological weight. Just knowing that the record isn't out.
Yeah.
So, but we're working on new stuff.
You're a billionaire with a shotgun, and you feel it in the back of your throat. Maybe it's the lonely nights or the days gone by. You know where you gotta go. So you hit the streets for a midnight stroll, or just a breath of fresh air. There's a siren sound up the avenue, and the streetlight color is a neon blue. What got into you?
You obviously have a lot of things going on. Like a lot of, you know, you're trying to get a record deal, man. That's an incredible amount of energy and time and, you know, we'll use the word here to kick it off, hustle being put behind it. And I think that's, I mean, I'm sitting here with two very busy people and I'm the lame-o who immediately went into 40-hour work weeks out of college, but whatever.
That's busy, though.
It is busy.
That's a different kind of busy.
I mean, my first job out of college was 60 hours a week for a year and a half.
So don't belittle your work.
I felt very hustled out, and now I'm just like a, I'm just like an old dude, whatever. So what is it? I think it's kind of a feature of millennial life that at some point you're going to have to put in a lot of time and work and lose a lot of sleep over bringing a project to fruition, whether it's an artistic project or something you're doing for work. Do you guys feel that way? Have you hustled? I'm kind of selling you as though you have, but how do you feel about it?
I feel like I'm constantly doing something. The cool thing is that I like all the stuff that I get to do. I remember talking to my mom when she was in college, she said that she was working three different waitressing jobs. And that's hustle, right? Mm-hmm. But she was doing it to do this thing that she didn't really care about, which was her college at that point.
Sure.
And I feel really, I mean, I worked in college. I worked at Radio K, which is actually just like social fun time. But but I feel like I am hustling, but it's all stuff that's purely selfish. You know, it's like, it's my jobs that I'm doing because I like to do them and music that I'm doing because I like to do it.
Sure.
And that feels really fortunate. So it's, yeah, it's hustling if you want to look at my schedule and see the 15-hour days and whatever, but it's not, like, detrimental. Mm-hmm. I don't know. What do you think, Charlie?
I actually constantly feel like I'm not hustling enough. And I that's why I was interested when you brought the topic up, because I don't know. I feel like there is a social pressure to be hustling or to be, like, broadcasting that you're hustling. And I had an experience where my mom was like, you know, you should come out for a vacation sometime. And I was like, I don't deserve a vacation. Like, I don't work hard enough to have a vacation, you know? Like, I should get to a point where I feel stressed enough that I need
like
a vacation.
But
I think, I mean, what I just told you about, you know, this waiting, that it's kind of that it's a product of so much hustle, right? Of the kind of hustle of, like, drive 12 hours to play in front of 15 people for $60 kind of hustle.
Yeah.
But then when you're back home and you can only really have a part-time job because, you know, you gotta have the flexibility to go on tour again, or you want to be hustling harder. Like, for example, you'll see if you get invited to a Facebook event and it'll be like, so-and-so is like birthday fondue corral. And then someone posts, oh, I wish I could make it, but like I got like a work thing or something. And I see stuff like that. I'm like, damn, I wish I was too busy to go. You know? Because the sorry is actually, you know, look at me.
It's proof of the hustle.
I got a lot of stuff going on. Yeah,
I've been feeling like some FOMO lately about, and God, this is going to sound like I'm mentioning this about you, Tess, but like people are working on projects, people are making films, people are in bands, blah, 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 blah. And I'm just like working for my paycheck. And somehow that feels like guilt inducing that I'm not, you know, working three part-time jobs or something. I don't know. It's a very strange consideration, but I think in like the artistic community, people want to see, you know, people who are not getting any sleep. And
well,
like,
the three part-time job thing is like evidence of the creative pursuit. Like you said, like you have to have that part-time thing that's flexible enough that you can leave, that you can, you know, like take Tuesdays off to practice with your band. Like it is evidence of that. But you took your printmaking class, which I was super envious of. It's not, I don't want you to feel bad.
I think the FOMO part of it is that's why it's probably the consciousness of your own hustle is exaggerated for us because you have a front row seat to everyone else's hustle.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I bet there's days you come home and you're like, I'm going to roast this chicken. I'm happy. This is great. I'm going to. And then you see that someone else is, you know, doing this band or doing this thing. And suddenly you feel like you're not hustling hard enough, you know.
Yeah.
But there's a similar instinct that drives that person to post about it.
Sure.
You know? Yeah.
The need to share the fact. Yeah.
I mean, I'm just talking about this, like, Facebook, but that's pretty much how I know what anyone else is doing.
Do you think that's where it comes from, this idea that you need to always be working on some kind of project or, you know, just be hustling? Is it the fact that we are millennials and we have to live up to this idea that, you know, we're doing something hard but creatively fulfilling? Is it our parents? I don't know. What's the source, do you think?
I don't know. It's hard, but it's like, I remember when a bunch of my friends were getting into grad school, for example, and I was like, man, I didn't apply to grad school. And then I took a step back, like, I never wanted to go to grad school.
Yeah, yeah.
But because I'm seeing that all these people are going to grad school, suddenly I feel like I didn't, you know, put forth enough effort to go to grad school. But you have to remind yourself, well, if I'm only comparing myself with, like, myself and my aspirations, what I actually want to do, this had nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
But I don't know if it's the cause of it. I just think it exacerbates whatever insecurities you already have about it.
Sure.
Yeah, whenever I see people, like, I follow a lot of musicians on Instagram, and whenever I see anyone, like, in the studio, I get really, like, why aren't I in the studio right now? Mm-hmm. Like, why aren't I recording something new? Mm-hmm. Like, why don't I have new songs or something? I get really FOMO-y about that, even though, you know, it's something that, like, in the hustle I'm participating
you're
in. But yeah, I feel like
for me, in this moment, I should be doing this.
Yeah, it aggravates that voice for sure for me.
Interesting.
Yeah.
But see, like, there's a part of my hustle which is also like, every time I make curry, it's just not thick enough, you know? And part of my hustle is like, I need to be better at, like, cooking the food I like.
Yeah.
And if I visualize that the same way that I would visualize, I want to be making, you know, six figures by the time I'm 28, if I'm thinking, I want to have, you know, I want to make a chicken pot pie so good that, you know, my Aunt Nancy will really like it.
Mm.
I just have to visualize that's part of my hustle, and suddenly I'm hustling.
Yeah.
Mm. That's true. Reorient your priorities to what you're already doing.
I also think a lot of the people that, you know, we know millennials are doing this hustle, like multiple part-time job things, projects. But a lot of energy I've heard from people lately, maybe it's just at this point in the winter, but has shifted towards self-care and, like, cooking a good meal for yourself, like, once a week, or going to the gym, or doing meditation. Like, part of people's hustle, I feel like, has reoriented just to have a little bit of sanity. Otherwise, it gets kind of nutso.
It is interesting that, like, the range of things, you know, you tell someone how your day goes, and you either get a, like, oh, that sounds fun, which is the Minnesotan being nice way of being like, you didn't do shit. And then they're like, oh my God, really? Wow.
Yeah.
Oh.
I hate that reaction.
And the range is so different from summer to winter. Like, in the winter, it's totally fine to be like, I came home, I made dinner, I, like, played PlayStation, and then I read for a while. It's like, good job. You, like, stayed alive for one more day. But if you do that in the summer, it would be like, you didn't
go outside.
Biking. You didn't go to the Stone Arch Bridge for some event or another? Like, why didn't you blah, 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 blah? It's funny to me. I just realized that now.
Yeah, you can get away with being...
I was going to say, people have been, like, not on my case this winter as, you know, just living my life over here, but it turns out it's because expectations are lower.
Yeah.
Oops.
I have friends who will ask me, like, or my roommate, like, oh, what are you going to do today? And I'll tell her, and it involves, like, probably just a few different stuff, like, if at a few different locations, because that's where I'm at right now. You know, I'm working a lot of jobs and whatever. Mm-hmm. And be like, oh, wow, that sounds like a lot. Like, that sounds really tiring. That sounds like a really big day. You should eat a really big breakfast and stuff. And I really don't like that reaction. Like, it makes me feel more stressed out about the stuff that's going on. It's like, it's a hustle, it doesn't feel like that big of a deal because you're just doing the stuff that you want to be doing. And in that way, it feels really fortunate. Like, it doesn't feel like I'm working three restaurant jobs to get through college like my mom did. You know, it doesn't feel like this detrimental, heavy thing.
Yeah,
it's just
there's,
like,
some reward in the doing of the work.
Yeah.
Interesting. Like,
piano lessons aren't part of my hustle. They're just
fun.
Fun.
Well, I'll just give an example. My when I was getting done with school in sort of late 2010, early 2011, it was, and, you know, I graduated with a journalism degree. That was a time when, like, every media outlet ever had already laid everyone off,
right,
and they were not in, like, a growth period yet. So what my professors and my advisors and all of our, the sort of, like, friends who are in the media said to me was, like, even if you don't have anything going on, make yourself look busy, which just to help your own job hireability. So it was like, build yourself a website to put your like 12 clips up there just to make it look like you have something going on, and like make sure you're busy on, you know, LinkedIn or whatever.
Start writing for a blog.
Yeah, just like this, the at the time, I really thought it was stupid. I thought it was just kind of busy work, but I came to realize that it's really, you know, kind of a source of status, and in terms of, you know, helping me get back to a point where it was, where, you know, sort of hireable, employable, it was helpful. And then my focus shifted to where I realized, and this is no offense to my workplace, but I realized that the work I do is not going to give me the same satisfaction as, you know, making a weird cassette tape or like whatever, taking a screen printing class. Like that is not, that kind of satisfaction, which has a very weird feeling to it, everyone has their own definition of it, was not going to happen in the workplace. So that's why my hustle now is like after 5:30, it's like don't answer your work email anymore and just work on whatever. Even if it's something as simple as like noodling on guitar for an hour or something, you know, it helps. I don't know where the drive, I think that's where the drive came from for me, was making myself look busy, even though my need to actually appear that way to other people is pretty much non-existent now that, you know, I'm in a completely different field than the arts. Oh, well.
So for millennials, if this is a trait of millennials, ultimately, what do you think that this means for us? Like, do you think we'll just keep hustling until we die? Like, all of us 60-year-olds are going to have 5 restaurant jobs? Like, what do you think's gonna happen?
It's hard to, I don't know, because I think like living in Minneapolis is so interesting, because I think you do encounter a fair amount of people who are really driven and career oriented, but I've met more people, you know, who live in Minneapolis who like have children, or, you know, younger than I would want to necessarily, but also who seem to have found contentedness sooner than I think I ever will. You know, I don't know. For a while I was really ingrained with the scene of urban farmers who, you know, would have a goat roast every 2 months, and and just surrounded by people who farmed in Minneapolis and just seemed so content. And I envied it, but I also knew it could never be me. But it does lead me to think that the millennial hustle thing we're talking about perhaps isn't so unique and ingrained in just our age group, and that it's, there are certain people who are want to always be hustling, and certain people who, and I think for me, perhaps it may be a veil that has to get lifted. And I realize that all I ever wanted was like a dog, and, you know, about like raising a child, it's still, you know, it's so much more deep and meaningful to me than being the best musician of all time.
Sure.
You know? So I think we are still humans who are drawn towards the same end goals, perhaps. I mean, that's pretty normalized, I guess, to say, like, you don't have to end up with a children or a dog or a house. Mm. But I think being content is ultimately more important to me than being successful.
Sure.
And I meet a lot of people who are my age who are more content than they are successful and are happy with that. And it makes me realize that how much I still want something that is success.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
At the moment, the next step looks intriguing still.
Yeah, right.
Sure.
There's no part of me that is like ready to
just be like, well, have fun.
Yeah, yeah.
So the hustle is a side effect of not having contentment. Is that?
I think that's.
Or I just think that there is, I mean, you know, there are people, our parents' generation hustled, you know, not maybe not in the same way that their parents hustled, which is the American dream.
Right.
But I more mean in the way that I don't know that we hustle is something that's part of the millennial generation. I just think we're more acutely aware of it because of the way that we're connected to each other.
But and because we're told that we're not ready for full-time regular people jobs yet.
Right.
It's kind of, you know, the whole, the media debate that's going on right now about, like, who would actually hire these people who just want to, like, trip off and blah, 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 blah. I think that's the reason, like, we have to make ourselves find, you know, find our own busyness until the older generations are ready to get out of the way and, like, you know, allow traditional definitions of success to filter down to us.
But, or it's, you know, it's like the startup kind of atmosphere where it's, there's no, you guys graduated and there's no jobs for you, so why not create your own kind of.
Yeah, for me, that's for sure, I feel like, where my hustle lies. Like, I graduated and there was nothing. So, and I, you know, still don't really know what I want in the world. I don't know if I want the, you know, brick house or the kids or whatever. So it's like, well, I'm just going to try a bunch of stuff and kind of see what fits or what doesn't. And that's still where I'm at. Just still like weeding things out because you don't know. Because it wasn't an option to know right away.
I think the hustle leads to, in older age, what could be called a hobby or all the way up to like your lifelong passion kind of thing. Like, you could be that rad ass dude you see who's like 75 and is playing violin outside, and you know that he just loves playing violin and has for a really long time. You know, that started probably as, and it still kind of is, a form of hustle, even if it's not, you know, the total focus of your life at that point. I think hustling will serve millennials really well when the world goes to shit and we have to, like, scavenge for food and, like, band together into, like, survivalist tribes and what have you. I think it'll work really well then, when it's, like, you need to be on the hunt to stay alive.
I just had one more thought. Maybe people hustle because they don't want to be alone. Like, if you're... Yeah. Well, I think about it, and it's like, I think sometimes my friends make themselves so busy so they don't have to be at home alone, or like, so they don't have to see their phones and see social media going on and being like, I'm not doing that. Like, to avoid that feeling, I think sometimes, I for sure know people in my life that make themselves extremely busy to avoid that FOMO or to avoid that feeling of I'm not doing enough and I'm potentially alone in the world. Because that's like a really scary thought that I think millennials try really hard to not have.
Yeah. I had a shockingly similar conversation with a friend last week. Wow.
Was it me? Was
it
me?
No, it wasn't.
Did we have this conversation?
No. Okay. Well, thanks to Charlie Rudoy for being our guest today.
Thanks for having me.
Busy dude. Learning more about Carol.
Oh, where can people find you on the internet?
Our website is carolmusic.net. We are on Facebook. I think it's Carol Music One. Someone has the Carol Music domain for SoundCloud and stuff, and has not posted anything. We message this guy like once a month, just being like, "Can we buy your domain, please? Can we buy your domain?" But I don't think there's a real person on the other end.
Sure.
So often there's Carol Music _ or ones, and then we're on Twitter. I do all the tweets.
I was wondering.
It's my sense of humor.
Yeah.
No one else's. Don't blame them. Two R's, two L's.
Two R's,
two L's. Sweet. Well, thanks, Charlie.
Thanks, guys.